Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We are streaming live on biz1190.com all over the world, and this program today will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, so tell your friends about that. Here at Driven to Business, we cover a wide variety of topics, most of them related to business success principles and the things that will help you in your career. We have a particularly interesting guest today, going off topic a little bit, but not that far. We have Rabbi Scott Sekulow as our guest today. Rabbi Sekulow was raised in a typical Reformed Jewish home. He is the rabbi and leader give me the name of that, Rabbi Scott. I've lost that in front of me here.
Sure. It's Congregation Beth Adonai. That means House of the Lord.
Congregation Beth Adonai. And Rabbi Scott is according to the bio here, a Messianic Jew. Rabbi, the term Messianic Jew is probably unfamiliar to a lot of people. You want to tell us what that means?
Well, it simply means follower of the Messiah, and it's taking the word Christian, which goes from Hebrew to Greek, Greek to Latin, Latin to English, and we just take it from Hebrew right to English. So it simply means follower of the Messiah, and of course, all the first believers were Jewish, so we see that, you know, we basically say we started, you know, back in around 30, 33 AD, and we're the oldest, really, sect of believers out there, because all the first believers were Jewish, therefore the term follower of Messiah or Messianic Jews.
Rabbi, I was raised as a Southern Baptist, and when I was a little boy, you know, we'd be in church, and I would hear that Jesus was a Jew, so I remember asking my dad, well, then why aren't we Jews? I mean, if Jesus was a Jew... It just makes sense. Why are we Baptists then?
A lot of people don't realize that he was obviously the Jewish Messiah. He came for the Jew first, as Paul says, and then also to the nations. And so we really see an important understanding of the Jewish people coming to know their Messiah. But just because we believe in the Jewish Messiah doesn't mean we give up our Judaism. Yeshua said in Matthew chapter 5, he says, I've not come to abolish the Torah, the prophets, but really to bring them to their fullness, to their full meaning. And that's really a beautiful picture that we have of the promise of our Messiah.
Yeah, that is something that I, having attended a couple of Messianic Jewish services, was quite impressed with. You guys, although you are, in our vernacular, Christian, the fact is you still maintain a lot of the Jewish customs and a lot of even the Jewish, ceremony, I guess would be the right word.
And which is, when you look through the scripture, you actually see the disciples doing that as well. Just people really don't focus in on that, so they kind of miss the fact that, you know, our Messiah, we call him Yeshua, that's his Hebrew name, that he went to services every Shabbat, that the disciples continued to go to, the temple after the resurrection. That's when Peter and they healed the man. They were going into the temple. They didn't stop doing that, and that's where we come from. We celebrate both the Old and New Testament, but in the Jewish light, which really gives us a great insight to the Scripture, because it's like reading a mystery novel. You can start halfway through, and sure you're going to know who done it, but you're not going to find out, all the information leading up to that to figure it out. And that's really when it all comes together.
Rabbi, you have a very famous brother, Jay Sekulow. I've heard Jay speak a number of times. Jay has argued some very important and interesting cases before the Supreme Court. Just briefly, you want to tell us about that just a moment, about one of them perhaps? Or?
Sure. Probably one of my most favorite cases that he did was really his first case, which was being able to hand out literature in public places. And what was so interesting about this case was the fact that when he was asked to do it, he didn't do that kind of law. He was actually a tax lawyer, and Moish Rosen with Jews for Jesus prayed about it and said, Jay, you're supposed to do this case. And Jay's like, I'm not that kind of lawyer, but the Lord put the situation to the place where he ended up taking the case. And it was going to be one of those cases that everyone thought was going to be like one of the 5-4 decisions. Matter of fact, Life magazine was following Jay around and doing a whole interview on him, and he was going to be on the front cover. And when he won it 9-0, it became not that big of a deal for them. But it was really interesting to see how God has used him in a number of different ways, how he's done those cases. I remember one case in particular as well where he didn't really feel that he had the his argument they weren't going to win the case. And he prayed about it, and literally the Lord, weeks before the case, he ended up changing his whole way of looking at it and doing it. And if you know anything about going in front of the Supreme Court, this is months in the making.
I have certainly never done it, I will tell you that.
And he actually did it, and he won that case. And it's been really amazing to see how God has used him and the work that the ACLJ does, not only here now in the United States, but around the world, and even in Europe and Israel and other places as well.
Rabbi, I think a lot of our business listeners may overlook the fact, or at least not think about it, but you know, if you name any country where religious persecution takes place, business persecution also takes place. It's very hard to have a free economy and a free market system without religious freedom. And so I sometimes make the argument to people that these things are not unrelated.
Right.
You know, people that will take your freedoms away from you will take all freedoms away from you. You can, and very often religious freedom is one of those where it starts. Rabbi, a lot of us have some knowledge of the nation of Israel, but most of our knowledge is kind of shallow. Let me just ask you, is Israel the nation of Israel I'm referring to, is it a theocracy?
It's actually, the government base is a democracy with hints of socialism. How about that? Example, its medical program is socialized medicine. It's one of the rare times that it actually works. And if, you know, it's one of the places, if you have to get sick, Israel is the place. Their knowledge and all that is just amazing. But they are very pro economy, pro, you know, companies. Matter of fact, if you look, most of the major, especially industrial companies, have places in Israel. Matter of fact, you know, the idea of the smartphone was originated in Israel, and Microsoft doesn't have one research and development office there, but two, and that's how important that country is.
You know something else that I happen to know from talking to a guy in a software and video business, that, you know, when you watch football games, that yellow line that appears to give you the first down marker, I don't know if you know this, that actually was developed in Israel. It was originally developed as part of a weapons program or something, or that technology was. Of course, now we all watch football, and we're accustomed to seeing that first down, yellow first down marker over there, where we know that's not really on the field, in case anyone doesn't know that.
But that's what's amazing, is that the amount of technology that comes through this small country blows you away. I mean, to see what they've done. You know, the U.S. military is the strongest in the world. And I love when we're in Israel, though, because, you know, Israel takes the airplanes that we have, and they kind of improve upon them.
Right, I've heard that.
And they'll actually do, you know, they'll have their top guns go against our top guns. And we were there one time, and our tour guide was saying that they had just had a Top Gun simulation, and the result was 15 planes were destroyed by one side, the other side destroyed one.
Right.
And everyone would think, oh, 15 planes, it must have been the U.S., and it wasn't. It was Israel.
Right.
And to see what they can do, they take and expand upon, it's just amazing.
You know, I was in Alaska. My wife and I were a few months ago on vacation. And while up there, Rabbi, we went to an ATV, an all-terrain vehicle place, to rent some ATVs. And the ATVs were called the Tom Car, and they're made in Israel. They're,
yeah.
And they're actually made for the Israeli Army. And Boy, those things were so fun to drive. Just amazing. Go across anything, you know, splash across rivers and climb up hills. And I mean, just all this suspension and everything. It was astonishing. I actually tried to find where to buy one here. They're a little out of my price range, frankly.
Well, and even things like, you know, like you said about that, I have a friend who shoots guns, and he wanted to get a loader for his 9mm, one of these rapid loaders.
Right.
And he went to this place, and there were several, and the guy said, if you want the best one, this is the one you have to get. And he picked it up, and it said, made in Israel. So, you know, it really, I mean, if you, they really know how to use technology and companies to really make a great product and for the rest of the world. And that's why they're a country that is really doing so well to help the rest of the world.
Rabbi, the what is the population of Israel? I mean, just in rough figures, do you have any idea?
Roughly about 7 million people live in the land. Of that, about 1 million are Arab people, and the rest are Jewish.
Which is interesting when you think about, you know, there are American metropolitan areas larger than that.
Right.
And how important this little nation is, and we all know a lot about the politics there. Most of us can name the prime minister and so forth there, and it is kind of a fascinating thing to look at. And not to get overly religious on it, but you know, I grew up, you know, in reading the scriptures and find out, you know, and you hear all your life that the Jews are the chosen people of God. Is there a sense of that there from the people that live there? Do they have that sense?
Yeah, but unfortunately, sometimes the sense is we're chosen, but yet because of that being chosen, we're persecuted, punished, and
right.
And picked on, and that's really, you know, an interesting part of it. But you know, to see also that there are more, you know, Jewish people who have won, you know, the top, you know, prizes with science and things like that shows that God truly does have a blessing upon His people. And who he's trying to, and what he's trying to do.
Well, in the next segment, I want to talk to you a moment about perhaps why is it the nations around Israel seem to hold them in such disdain? Because it does, on a lot of levels, it doesn't make one bit of sense. You are listening to Driven to Business. Our guest is Rabbi Scott Sekulow. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Hang around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the second segment of this week's Driven to Business. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're really honored and glad that you're here. The show website is eddiemayfield.com. Go there and check us out, and you can see a podcast of today's program, plus a uplink to Rabbi Scott Sekulow's information. So check that out. Rabbi, I know this is a hard question to answer in a simple manner, but I think a lot of us don't get it. Why is it that the nations around Israel harbor such hostility toward them? Why is that?
Well, you know, it all dates back to the scripture. And what we see when, you know, God, you know, speaking to Abraham and then, you know, and telling him that, you know, your son Isaac I have chosen to, you know, as my, where your offspring will come from. And with Ishmael, he says, he will always be an enemy to not only you, but everyone else, and including his own brothers.
Well,
so what we see here is God's word coming true. And, you know, it's amazing to see how this is taking place and that the nations around Israel have constantly, you know, by them, you know, following really, you know, a false, you know, understanding of false God with Muhammad, that, you know, they're being used to fight amongst themselves. But here's the good news. One day, they're going to come to know the true King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and there'll be a day when the weapons are turned into plowsheds. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And we're actually seeing Christians, Arabs, being, born again, Arabs becoming believers in Messiah. And it's really amazing when that happens, you really see a radical change take place where they go from hating Israel to loving Israel. And a gentleman that I think of and actually become very good friends with is Tad Saeed, and he was actually Yasser Arafat's personal driver.
Wow.
And he was a sniper, which meant, he killed, he was a terrorist. And God radically changed his life, and he loves the Jewish people now. And it just, and you can see it in his eyes. It's truly an amazing sight. So while there are, fighting amongst not only us, but amongst themselves, there is a light at the end of the tunnel where they will come to know the truth.
Almost unexpectedly, even given the, at least at a national level, the hostility between Israel and its neighbors, there is trade that goes on. And of course, an interchange of goods and so forth. Rabbi, you were telling me before the program about this company, SodaStream.
Yes.
This, which is actually, I think, a Palestinian company, you said.
Actually, it's an Israeli company.
Okay.
That, you have very famous people on the radio promoting it. You see it in all the stores.
Right.
But it's actually based in Israel, but they're in a settlement. And people have this idea of a settlement being, tents. They're not. They're cities. We went to one settlement, and it has a university that works with NASA. It's just amazing to see what goes on. And here's a company that has really bridged the gap. And they employ thousands of people, both Jewish and Arab. They pay them the same salaries. You have to remember, in the Palestinian areas, their average salary is a couple dollars a week.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy. Here they're making good money, benefits. Matter of fact, the company, not only does it have a synagogue in their building, it has a mosque so they can go pray as well, and they work together with no problem. And they had a spokesperson sign on, and one of the groups that she worked with, she was an ambassador for, wanted her to stop because they want to boycott Israel because of the fact that Israel won't give back the land, and we can definitely talk about that. And she's like, wait a second, you want to boycott a company that's employing and giving benefits to not only Jewish people, but Arabs as well, and paying them well. They would lose these jobs. And that's really what's amazing to see. Even the one of the foreign ministers of Canada said, if that's the case, I don't want to boycott them, I want to support them.
That's great. That points out the danger, I think, of jumping to conclusions about anything, no matter what side of the fence you're on, occasionally, is without investigating all of the facts. Rabbi, is there a predominant industry or business in Israel?
Well, there's a lot of different trades. Like I said, Microsoft has
right.
two main offices in there. One of the big trades you're seeing right now is actually natural gas. It's really interesting how God works. The largest, this is the largest in the world, natural gas mine was just found, if it wasn't last year, it was 2 years ago now, just off the shores of Israel. And they're going to, they say within the next 10 years, they're literally going to be able to bring out enough natural gas where they won't need help from anybody. Boycott or not, Israel will be able to handle itself. And it's amazing to see how, again, it's not just one area, it's multiple areas that succeed from that country. Here's a country that, I'm not a farmer, but if you tell a farmer, can you grow an orange tree right next to an apple tree, they'll tell you no. Well, go to Israel, you see it being done. It's absolutely amazing what they do.
Regular listeners to our program, we've talked about natural gas quite a bit here. In fact, I've had the Brian Batson, who's the president of Atlanta Natural Gas, here as a guest. I'm firmly convinced that the next economic boom worldwide will be driven by natural gas. And I'll give you a couple reasons for that. Here in the United States, for instance, as having just gone through a cold snap here, which, and, you know, all the complaints about traffic and all that, that was fine. Can you imagine what it would have been like had we not had electricity and natural gas?
Right.
It would have been, it would have gone from being an annoyance to something very dangerous. And you know, the U.S. has large stores of natural gas. Our prices here, I don't know about the prices in Israel. Our prices here are way, way, way below world market. We began exporting that in 2015 as liquefied natural gas, which I think Israel is either in the process of doing or is already doing. That's a huge, huge economic boon because there are a lot of places that need a lot of natural gas, like China, that don't have it. And so
with them just finding, I mean, this is the large, you can go online, you can see this article's been written about it. It's the largest natural gas find in the world. It was, when they first found it, they thought it was so big, and then they found out it was even bigger than they thought. And it's, like you said, it's going to put Israel into a point where they don't need other countries, you know, help. They're going to be able to be completely self-sufficient.
Well, given what I know about the natural gas industry here in the United States, that is amazing. I wasn't aware. I had read they were exporting it. I did not realize the scope of it until talking to you. Hey, in about a minute here, and we can talk about this after the break. But do you see a rise of anti-Semitism in the world, just in general?
You know, anytime the economy is shaky, you always see that. But, yes, especially in a lot of the European countries, we're seeing that. But you have to also remember there also is a strong rise of Islam in these countries. And so that's kind of going hand in hand, and you do see that. And it is it's an issue, but it's also in God's plan. We know in the end days all the nations, including the United States, will turn their back on Israel. And so this understanding of what's taking place in the long run will show that really God is in control and that he gets the glory. But with the economy, when it's bad, definitely the Jewish people, you do see that. But with the rise of Islam in many of these countries, it's a major issue.
You actually raised an issue I'd like to talk to you about after the break, and that has to do with our with the present administration, with American policy toward Israel and how and changes that you've seen, perhaps anything that's worrying you about that. You are listening to Driven to Business. Plenty more to come. Stick around. Check us out at biz1190.com, streaming live. I'm Eddie Mayfield, and we'll be back. And welcome back to this segment of Driven to Business. We're glad you're here. Rabbi, before the break, we were talking a little bit about anti-Semitism in the world and sort of going on about, sort of teasing about how we view that here in the United States. Back in a couple of years ago, my wife Vicky and I were in Germany and we visited Dachau, infamous concentration camp there, and it's a sobering place to walk around. I don't know if you've been there or not. You probably have, but
I have actually not been there, but I've been to the ones in the former Soviet Union. So
it's really a strange place to walk into. You just get quiet when you go in there. It's a very, very sobering thing, and it's right in the middle of a housing development that at first I thought had just built up around it since the war. But as I talked to some folks in there, that housing development was there during the war, and it was there during the time that concentration camp was open. And, you know, the Germans are generally friendly, nice people, and it just raises a question to me, and I think especially for you as a Jewish person, I'd like to ask, how do you explain how so many of those people just went at least – seemingly insane or something?
Well, you know, the you have to remember the situation of the country. Their economy was in shambles. You had a man that came up in leadership who gave them a scapegoat to blame.
Right.
And, you know, the choice, too, was you follow his way or you die. I mean, it wasn't go about your business type of plan. And like you said, they literally, it was within their area, and yet they had to act like it wasn't going on. And matter of fact, I think it was the movie Band of Brothers that showed that they actually would, the soldiers brought the people there because they're like, how could you let this happen in your own neighborhood? And, you know, you can't blame the entire country for the government. And while there were many that unfortunately did support the Nazis, there were many who gave their life and hid Jewish people and others and literally gave their life because of that. And those are the ones that we forget about. But that, I think, is really the heart of many of the people there.
I read a book about it, and the title escapes me, but I actually bought it in the library there, and it was written by a Jewish person. Just an excellent sort of a philosophical approach to what had happened there. And they said one of the mistakes there, and they went through everything you just said. They went through how that the economy had collapsed. Germany was extremely embarrassed after World War One. Had huge punishments put on them by France and by others, with large and a debt load that they just couldn't. And the average person was just so was destitute there. And then here comes this charismatic leader who gives them someone to hate that's causing all this pain. And for reasons that are still not clearly understood, he picked the Jews, although he didn't just pick Jews, he picked other people too, but Jews primarily were the ones that he picked.
And most people don't realize this too. Theoretically, he was Jewish.
That's right.
His grandmother was Jewish. And so you wonder if there was some issue that happened there that brought that in.
The writer of this book, who I believe was a female, said that the one mistake, though, was to think that Germany was an isolated case and an anomaly that could not happen again, given those circumstances. And I wonder what you think of that.
I agree with you. We can see it happen again, and we really do see it happen. It might not be that the Jewish people, but we've seen that in other countries when the economy starts going, they do point fingers at it. And you even hear that type of thing here in the States. The Jewish people control the the entertainment industry and all this. And those are again, you're looking for scapegoats to blame for issues.
When I was a kid, I used to hear things like that occasionally. I don't really hear that. I haven't heard that in a long time. In fact, we're such a homogenized society in many ways now that I think a Jewish person can walk around pretty much incognito in American society, and no one know that they're Jewish. But do you as a Jewish person, do you still see anti-Semitism in America, and is it increasing?
I'm kind of chuckling here because I was in a situation just yesterday, and a person who in a loving, is trying to be very nice about it, was like, oh, well, I've always heard about the Jews. They always have money and things like that. And, these stereotypes, I'm like, you're trying to smile through it and educate. I used to always say, we had the money, but as soon as we become believers, we have to give it all back and go in the other line. So, but, why are Jewish people prosperous? It's because God's blessing us. And, an education is a vital part of a Jewish family. Plus, really until our generation, we haven't seen large or high percentage of divorce. So, and all the Jewish holidays, it's very family-oriented. And I think that really makes a difference. And people get jealous of that. People are jealous that, the families are staying together, that there is education. When my grandfather came over from Russia, he was a farmer. And yet in one generation, they became businessmen and accountants, and they went to school because the emphasis was education. And I think that makes a big difference.
I think as much as education is what you said about families, I think to me that's one of the appalling things in our country. And it affects everything, business, you name it. when you develop an underclass that's unemployable, basically, in a society, then no one is helped by that. And I, you know, I think tracing that back to breakup of families, and you could make something racial about that, but as some writers have pointed out, if you go to some European countries that have the exact same problem, only those people are white.
Right.
But they have the exact same breakdown of a family, which makes an underclass. They happen to be white in some of these European countries. It kind of overrides race, and you can look beyond it, and it makes it perhaps here when you see it in racial terms, it makes it a little easier to explain, I think. But I do think that I was in the Coast Guard with a gentleman from California, a Jewish guy. In fact, we're still friends to this very day, and it was pretty cool because we were stationed up in New York City, and he had all these distant relatives that he never knew, but they were always having us over for meals and so forth. And it was, I always thought it was the neatest thing. You know, they don't even know us, and they're just insisting we come over and eat because we had no money, so we were happy to do that. And you know, get over and see them. But I do think that family culture is huge.
It really is. Yeah, and we also have a joke too. Yeah, if you look at all the Jewish holidays, you can summarize it this way: they tried to kill us, we won. Let's eat.
that's great.
But it is, family is very important. And you know, I remember, you know, our family, we have what's called the family circle, and it was really started during when they first came over, but very much during the Depression. And the family, even immediate cousins and such, would get together and eat and help one another out. And that's really what it takes. You know, we joke around, but you look at a Jewish business, you know, usually it's very family oriented. The children are working it. You know, I remember growing up as a kid. You know, at 12 years old, I was a partner in my brother Jay and Gary. We both had a pretzel business, and you know, we sold pretzels at the original Atlanta flea market here. But the knowledge that I got from that was really amazing. Matter of fact, in Sunday school, we have what we call, you know, when we would go to school on Sunday, so we had Sunday school, and I remember you could pick out your classes. And I remember coming from the first day, it was like fifth or sixth grade, and my father said, "Oh, you know, how'd you like your classes?" I said, "Well, that was okay, but there was one that I was, you know, kind of not, you know, wasn't what I was expecting." And you know, as a father, he's kind of going through his mind. He knew the classes I had chosen. He said, "Well, which one?" I said, "Jewish prophets." He goes, "Well, what did you think it was?" I said, "I thought it was how Jews made money." Just, you know, as a kid growing up, the only being in a family-owned business, that's what we heard: profits.
That's hilarious.
So, you know.
Never thought of that before in that way. You know, Dennis Prager, who you probably, sure, if you don't know, you know of, but he has a national talk show. In fact, he's on Salem's sister station, 9:20 a.m. here in town.
Right. He's on the station that my wife and I, we have a radio show on 970.
Right. Exactly. WNIV. I heard a speech he gave one time, and he talked about, this is very interesting, he talked about, of course, he's Jewish, and he talked about when he was growing up, how much joy there was in the practice of Judaism as he grew up. And he mainly was telling Christians that they should not remove, you should not remove joy from your, as he would term it, religious practices if you want your children to continue those practices. And that's, you're sort of alluding to that in what you're talking to us about as a child.
Right. Yeah, when the kids get involved and they're a part of it, you know, we have our congregation, Beth Adonai, it's located in Tucker, and we have our services on at Saturday morning, Friday night. We have a new congregation up in Flowery Branch, and we invite the kids to be a part of it. They're in the service. They get to come up and we do a blessing over them. But what's really interesting, you see our kids afterwards, they're running their cameras for our video. They're actually in our kitchen cleaning up because we get them involved, and they're a part of it, and they appreciate it. They take ownership in it, and it really means so much more when it's not just something my parents are doing, but it's something that they're doing.
And I think even on a more macro level, and both of us are people of faith, and the faith part of that is extremely central to our lives. But you know, even more than that, that's practice for life. That tells you how to be a man or a woman, and to be a participating part of society, to be a good employee, to start your if you want to start your own business, how to do it, and I just think that that is such a wonderful thing that you step up, that you have a part, you step up, you take responsibility, and you do it, and you teach it in an almost fun way to them as they're doing it. Hey, when we come back from the break, I know you've done some things in Russia. I've been there, and I want to talk to you about that a little bit as we come back. Time is flying by. You're a great guest, and I appreciate you being here. It's been very interesting to hear you talk. You're listening to Driven the Business. One more segment. Don't go anywhere, and we'll be back in just a moment. By the way, this program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and on eddiemayfield.com, I will have links up there to the rabbi and his congregation. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of this week's edition of Driven to Business. We're always glad you're here. I enjoy hearing from you. Go to eddiemayfield.com and stay in touch. Our guest today, an excellent guest, is Rabbi Scott Sekulo. Rabbi, you're the leader of, as we've already mentioned, of Congregation Beth Adonai, if I'm saying that correctly.
You said it right.
Here in Georgia. Let's talk about leadership a moment. I'm always intrigued by leadership. I own a small business, EMA, which is a electronic maintenance associates, and we do industrial automation, sponsors this program. And I'm also active and have always been active in leadership roles within my church. And I'm sort of a student of leadership. I'm not a very good leader, but I'm a good student of it. I like to watch good leaders. Tell us about leading that congregation. Tell us about your leadership style and perhaps how you developed it.
Sure. Well, I truly believe in empowering people who have gifts and talent and let them, go and do the work and be there to support them. And when they do mess up, to encourage them, because, the best way for us to learn is to make mistakes.
Right.
And, when we do that, it teaches us and it lets us grow. And I actually had another congregation from South Carolina who wanted to come and really had seen what we were doing and wants to imitate what we were doing. And they said, can you get your leadership together and do it? And I said, sure. And when I started realizing how many people we now have in leadership from when the congregation started, it was amazing to see. I mean, we literally filled up a room, but with all the different ministries. That's what it can do. And as a leader, we can't do everything. But when we empower people to do it and use their gifts and talent, and then more importantly, to get to step out of their box, out of their comfort zone, to really do more, you really see a tremendous opportunity for people to grow and to bring that entrepreneurial spirit into the congregation.
I've often observed, as have a lot of other people, certainly not original with me, that it takes more leadership talent to act as a leader or perform leadership roles within a volunteer organization. Now, you can't go too far with that, because even if you're managing a business and you're paying people in that business, you still, if that's the only reason they're following you is that you're paying them, that's not going to be, you're not going to accomplish a lot. You need to go way beyond that. But at least you do have that. But in a congregation, you have to exercise a lot of caution in how you say things to people. And you're basically describing the role of a leader as a coach in a way.
Right. And when you encourage people, when they enjoy doing what they're doing, right, they don't care about that they're not getting paid. They're enjoying it.
Right.
And that's really what makes the difference. And you'll see a person, if they really are enjoying what they're doing, they'll want that to succeed even more. We're a congregation. We were the first Messianic congregation in the country to have our own app. Matter of fact, the joke in our family, you mentioned Jay earlier, was We had a app on both iPhone and Android before the American Center for Law and Justice, and they kept on giving them excuses. And he finally said, "Look, my brother who has this, you know, ministry has not one but two, and we can't get one." So, you know, by encouraging and developing, that really, I think, really helps people grow. But you have to. We're on a, you know, our ministry's cutting edge. We live stream our services. Something that a lot of congregations still don't do. We don't have just one camera. We have four cameras that take shots. And we don't have $1 million budget. Matter of fact, the guy who helps us put it together is amazing what we do on a small budget, but we can make it look good. And what I really believe in is when you're going to do something, do it to your best. Doesn't even mean it has to be the most expensive or perfect, but if you do your best, it will show through in everything you do.
I think for anyone in business, the idea of empowering, and that's a term, we may be showing our age here, Rabbi, that's sort of an 80s term that came around, but nonetheless, it's still a good term. And you know, the opposite of that is when you assign people tasks and then you tell them exactly how to do it, and then you stay over their shoulder and be sure they dot all the I's and cross all the T's. And the problem with that is that no one, and I mean no one, enjoys working under those conditions.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I have, I tell people, someone has an idea. I said, you know, I would love to hear your ideas, but you need to be ready to head up that because God put it on your heart.
Right.
And he put it on your heart for a reason. So you got to go do it.
That is one of my favorite things to say to people in church is that they, you know, we ought to be, and they name something. I say, well, maybe you should head that up.
Yep.
And it sort of changes it. Well, no, I didn't want to do that. So, well, neither does anybody else. So, you know, that's maybe why we're not doing that right now. I've been really fortunate, Rabbi, here on the program of interviewing some great leaders, and you're among them doing that. And I'm often struck by their humility. And I can name a number of people we've interviewed on here that are really very accomplished business people that are very humble people. And it, for some reason, although I know that's how real leaders are, I'm in some ways struck by it and surprised by it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think the main reason is if anyone knows someone who's succeeded, they haven't done it on their own. And you need to recognize that. You know, people will come to me and say, oh, great, great service. And my immediate response is, well, I have the easy part. I'm just the messenger. And, you know, everyone can take that understanding of, look, it by using and having other people help you to achieve that goal, that's the most important part. And it's not taking, oh, I have the credit. It's bringing it in together.
I was going to ask you about this earlier, and we're pretty low on time here, but let me go ahead and throw it out there and just be unfair about it while we're at it. And go ahead and put you on the spot. I know that you have lived and worked in Russia and done some work there. Give us just your impressions of the post-Soviet Russia.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. On the post-Soviet Russia, I was actually there when the walls came down.
Oh, wow.
My now wife and I were there, and we were literally there when Reagan was signing the papers.
Wow.
And so then we went back to do ministry years later, and it's been amazing to see how that country went from, you know, a dictatorship without God to now having more freedom with God there, and to see how it's just grown and how the people have changed has been truly amazing. But there, you know, the old saying there was, in Russia, they pretend to pay us and we pretend to work. and now they, you know, now that they can own their own businesses and things like that, life is changing and it's getting for the better there.
I was absolutely astonished, I'll just tell you, when I went there recently at the entrepreneurial spirit of the area. I did not expect that. I was really, and you just sort of feel it walking down the street and all these businesses around there. It was completely unexpected for me, I'll tell you that.
It is truly amazing, and you do see that difference. Yeah, I've done work in Cuba as well, and there you feel the exact opposite. Everyone is, it's suppressed. There is no, you know, the freedoms aren't there, the businesses aren't there. But when you have that, that's what, the, you know, what builds our economy is not Coca-Cola, IBM. It's the small mom and pop
exactly.
who say, I have a vision, I want to take it and try it and go out and do the work. You know, that's what our economy needs now, are more people to do that.
Of course, you're preaching to the choir here. Do you guys have a choir in your church? I guess I didn't ask. but that's exactly what this program is about. And although we try to focus on business, we by default sort of, without planning to, sort of focus on small business because, Rabbi, that's where I'm from. Rabbi, you've been a fantastic guest. Thank you so much for appearing today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And you guys tune in on 970 WNIV and listen to the Rabbi's program and go to the website, get his links, and check him out. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back here next week. Bye-bye. She was terminally pretty. She held him up and he held up.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.